And I think that inspiration is a part of social change, that our activists need to be inspired, that our students need to be inspired, that all youth and people need to be inspired to realize the power in thinking different.
You're listening to Faux Real, and I'm your host, Dawn Borchardt. On this podcast, I'll be welcoming the most diverse and distinct voices in indie film for revealing conversations about craft, inspiration, and the social role of cinema in the 21st century.
Hello, my name is Anisia Ozeman, and I'm the co-director and director of photography of Neptune Frost.
And I'm Saul Williams, and I'm the co-director and writer-composer of Neptune Frost, a science fiction musical that tells a story of a Colton miner and an intersex runaway and how they meet in a dream and bring that dream to life.
That's actually a pretty succinct description for a film that has so much going on with it. But I wanted to start by saying, Saul, the very first film festival I ever attended was Toronto International Film Fest in 98. So I was 9 years old. And the very first film I ever saw at a film festival was Slam, which is a wild film to see at 9 years old, I have to say. But
it's quite a talkative film.
So I'm super excited to get to talk with you today. It's just kind of like been following your career for a long time now.
That's super cool.
Was that like 25 years, I think?
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah. Happy to see you and talk with you. Well, I kind of wanted to start by sort of bridging on that film a little bit, in the sense of if you could talk about the use of melodical language. You went from a spoken word film that I saw when I was 9 to now a musical, and talk about the use of that kind of, the melodical language and where that fits in with filmmaking and your version of storytelling or your way of storytelling.
Well, I would say that first off, Slam was probably my first attempt at screenwriting. However, our approach to it was through recording ourselves, improvising, and then creating kind of a script based on those recorded improvisations over the course of 9 months. However, as a poet, I do have a very deep appreciation for heightened language. And in working on Neptune Frost, I would say that process was ameliorated by the fact that we were working with Rwandan and Burundian actors who also come from a culture where poetry plays an elevated role. And so what I was writing for the film was really corresponding with the style and level of communication and how it works in the, Rwandan and Burundian tradition of poetry. And so there was a unique correspondence there. However, this film for Anisia and I was really an opportunity to project onto the screen what we kind of wish we could have seen as kids. And so that's not just images, that's also storytelling, that is where and how the language, resides, its relationship to music and the musicality of the language, colors, all of these things correspond with, this yearning that we've had towards what we would like to see in a cinema.
To kind of build on that to a specific point in the film and to talk about the place of poetry and art in the larger spectrum of the world, there's a part where one of the hacks, for lack of a better description, and someone responds saying, like, why did you not launch an attack? Like, poetry is just, I don't remember what they say, a game. Mm-hmm. So could you guys expand a little on how you feel the role of like art, poetry, and film play in social change and societal uprisings?
I know very well the moment you're speaking of, and it's a question, that I think artists can sometimes be asked, which is, how can art contribute to the societal change that we want to see? You write music, you write poetry, what is that? It's rhetoric, you're a rhetorician, I believe strongly that everyone can do a lot simply by playing their part, by investing in that which they have gained a sort of knowledge of through their passion connected to that thing, regardless of what it is they do, whether it's gardening, whether it's storytelling, what have you, by attributing, you know, your skills towards that end, there is a contribution to be made there. And so the, you know, there's a sense that when you look at the existing structures as they exist, whether in cinema, in entertainment, in music, in the industries surrounding those in the, you know, those industries and what have you, they are all heavily formatted through and kind of within the barricades of a Western gaze. You know, so that you end up thinking that a story has to be told a particular way for that story to be valid, that it has to feature a particular element for that story to be valid. And there's a great deal of empowerment that can occur when people like us who have sat on the receiving ends of a lot of these stories and have felt excluded or have felt like, why would they do it this way? Or why didn't they think of that? To come up with a story that is about empowerment, that is about seeing these, you know, some people call that a coming of age story, but in our film, we really do see Neptune, Matalusa, the miners, literally step into their power, And of course, that power corresponds with the power that's even buried in the earth where they live, you know, which corresponds with the resources that have been pulled, you know, from that ground in the context of the film, but also in reality to fuel our technological progressions. Right? To fuel our economies. I mean, diamonds and gold are still the basis of the Western economy, but the diamonds and gold are sourced on the continent. And it's not just diamonds and gold, just like it's not all coffee and sugar. It's not all chocolate and rubber. It's not all coltan and tantalite. It's not all uranium. You understand, all of these things are sourced in the same place. And our story, you know, attempts to find a way of situating a story in that universe, which is also this universe, but in a way that illuminates the viewer in realizing their connection to the overall reality that exists and inspiring them. And I think that inspiration is a part of social change, that our activists need to be inspired, that our students need to be inspired, that all youth and people need to be inspired to realize the power in thinking different.
I think for the sake of our humanity, we have to be in constant dialogue and questioning to our boundaries. I think we, as soon as we are feeling comfortable in those boundaries and thinking that, you know, it is the absolute truth and reality, I think it's dangerous. So I think the idea of art is to propose those spaces of questioning and dialoguing with those, you know, form and boundaries and preconceptions and how to break the walls, enlarge the visions and dream.
I'm very interested in this idea that is talked about a lot in your film about binary. There's multiple levels of it through gender, I would say awakeness and wokeness versus dream, nature versus technology, colonizer versus colonized, and even like getting to talk to you two right now, like co-directing and you two have, or, you know, you're a man and a woman co-directing this film. Anisia, I'm kind of curious more so from you, like how you see this structure of binary, especially from a co-directing standpoint, when you're talking about these different structures and boundaries and binaries and how, I don't know, what place does that have in your world and what is that conflict like?
It has a huge place, you know, a huge place, because what the world is assigning you is of course conditioning your capacity to expand or to take space or to be empowered by your imagination or to be restricted in your imagination. So it has a huge impact. And I think the film is also exploring those themes, like what pushes me away from being seen, being finding a community, stepping into my own power, communicating, and finding a safe place for all of that. So contrarily, I think, to nature and technology, I think technology is in nature already. I think we have technology in ourselves too. And we also have minerals because we are made of stars. So, you know, I think those things are more fluid when they are not encaged by, you know, concepts that are inherent to our society and to the model in which we live. And so, which is a patriarchal, you know, imperial and you know, Judeo-Christian, and all of those things are there to control, you know, to control and for a few to be empowered on our back. And so, of course, I am in the middle of it. I am totally in the middle of it, being the co-director here with, you know, is she really, you know,
contributing?
You know, what did she really do? I mean, we know him, but what is she doing? You know, and that on the, you know, it can be funny and also sometimes demanding in terms of energy to overcome that type of push that are so typical. And I think the film is talking about breaking those type of compartments and those type of recurrency in the way we approach a being.
There's a quote that I really like, that like what you're saying kind of made me think of, is we power systems more effectively than we destroy them. Can one of you speak on that and expand on that a little bit? Or like, I know that feeds into the broader message of the film and society today, really.
Yeah, there is a question in the film, which is what is mine, you know, and what is mind also from me? How am I the ultimate mind person, etc., for the profit of somebody else, some other places, etc.? But then in that weird system, we are so far embedded in that way of being, you know, on the receiving hand or on the oppressed hand, that sometimes those things work together.
Yeah.
Like in a very bizarre, reversed type of, I would say almost like drug addict or like, you know, addictional.
In the sense that, say, a society that, you know, believes in the oppression of a huge majority of its citizens takes into account the possibilities of resistance and builds prisons. It's a part of actually the way in which it takes note of itself. It's a part of the cycle. It knows that there'll be resistance. And so they find ways of labeling certain aspects of that, even if that existence is simply as simple as what they would term as loitering, which is standing around and not working. They have a name for all of these things and they take it into account. And so the system becomes stronger even as you resist against it. So
the resistance is also a part of the data.
Yeah.
It's a part of a calculation, right?
Yeah.
That if you don't pay attention, you can get reversed against
itself. So. Yeah, they use the algorithm of resistance against those who resist. And so it's a form of surveillance and calculation and what have you. But that statement, we power systems better than we destroy them, is just really a thought on the inevitability of progression, that we are moving forward regardless. We are always moving forward. And so as we move forward, it becomes important to remember what hasn't worked and lay it aside so that we don't move that forward with us, to find, you know, new ways of naming things and structuring things as we move forward so that we can find the space to leave that which doesn't suit us behind, right? But the actual process of turning around and destroying something may not be the way that it works.
I think in the film, there is that idea that, you know, as much as when they step into their power, they are finally putting themselves on the map with technology, with the help of their connection to through the motherboard to technology. And so they're like, hey, finally, we are seen. But that same thing of being seen puts them in danger.
Yeah.
So that same, you know, the same empowerment can also produce the exact the danger that is to be visible. So it's also, I think, in relationship to that in the film.
There's a quote that to me brings a really beautiful kind of equilibrium despite conflict or binaries or who has control, which is, everybody knows when the sunrise, see it dawn in their own eye. And I thought that was like a really great way to sort of empower everyone, regardless of how much power you have or don't have or who you are. I love this concept of dreams in your film. And like, I have very vivid dreams. And a couple days ago, I had a dream where my boyfriend was like acting really crappy and like being a really weird space. And when I woke up, I like legitimately expected him to apologize to me for it. And he was like, that's not me. That wasn't me in your dream. And I was like, yeah, but like, you hurt my feelings. And he was like, but I didn't. And he did not apologize. He like stood his ground and was like, no, I will not do that. But I was like, damn. There's this thread of dreams and different, I'm creating the name, not universes, but dimensions in your film. And I'm curious to hear like how dreams influence, or do they influence you guys, like literal dreams, or if there's a dream that's really memorable to you that has impacted you.
You know, I think that that attachment to dreams comes from at the very beginning of our encounter, we used to dream in continuity of the day. Like, the dream would like erase the spaces between day and night. So we would like be awake and then go into a dream where that day was continuing, like a kind of weird space like that. And I think the idea of the dream informing reality and informed by reality, and also enabling an understanding that is maybe deeper, because it's more mysterious, it's more coded, but then also it's a way of decoding things.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the dream supplies the template for beautiful storytelling and time traveling within storytelling. It allows room for the unexpected or the unbelievable, the surprising, for the extraordinary encounter. And it's something that every single person can relate to, because we all dream.
You know, people say that, it is said that scientifically we dream in black and white. It's not true, right?
It's not true.
So it's also a universe where you can explore taste and colors that maybe are
fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you both. This wraps up our time. I really appreciated this conversation and really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Drink water, take deep breaths. Don't forget about it. Have a good day, you guys.
You too.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you are able to see this film. The music is Lost and Bound by Talin Kali. The podcast artwork is by Whitney Salgado. And I'm your host, Dawn Borchardt.